Educator Ewan Blackman hosts the You and Me and the ISD podcast, connecting the community to the local school district and ins and outs of how to work together to improve the quality of education for our next generations. Here's your host, Ewan Blackman.
Hey, welcome to You and Me and the ISD podcast. I'm your host, Ewan Blackman, here on the OBBM Network. And today we have with us James Quintero from the Texas Public Policy Foundation. Welcome, James. Thank you for joining us today.
Ewan, thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure, sir. Could you give us just a little bit of a way of introduction to our audience as to who you are and what it is the Texas Public Policy Foundation actually does?
Yeah, great question. So I've been privileged to serve with the foundation for almost 15 years now. Most of that time has been spent really advancing conservative public policy in the local government realm. And let me tell you, there's no shortage of shortages of opportunity to do that. When you look at the local government landscape, I think it's absolutely littered with the progressive mindset and all of the consequences thereof. Now, when it comes to the Texas Public Policy Foundation itself, really, I think the best way to understand what we do is we help turn ideas into laws. So we work with the legislature very closely to formulate public policy and then implement that policy through the legislative process. In my role as the local government director, I also have an opportunity to work with city halls, with trustees and county commissioners to also implement policy at the local level. But I would say the bulk of our activities are aimed at the legislature.
Okay, fantastic. So that's some real action that can be taken on the state level to effect better changes in policies affecting all of us at the end of the day, which is an interesting position to be in if you're libertarian. Give some of your background or your specialties. Yeah. Quantitative analysis, research composition, writing, marketing management. The quantitative analysis side, that's my wheelhouse. I enjoy looking at numbers and deriving thoughts, ideas, seeing trends. Two of my favorite words in physics, just to geek out for a second with the audience, would be interpolate and extrapolate in looking at graphing data. So those are two very useful tools to have. So taking a look at local taxes and how that impacts us on the local level, and where I got involved with James was on an article you did a couple of years ago about superintendent pay in specifically in the DFW area. And I know you're down in Austin with your public policy foundation, but we're taking a look at Dr. Jeannie Stone, who recently resigned from the Richardson ISD school district. And you found some interesting numbers to think about in terms of the pay of superintendents. Can you talk us through a little bit of that?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I think has been lost in this modern progressive era is the fact that public service is supposed to be a service. You're not supposed to get rich by entering the world of government employment. And that principle has really been lost when it comes to superintendents and other top administrators in our public schools. And, you know, what I would do is call the audience's attention to a very useful tool that I use on a fairly frequent basis. The Texas Education Agency has a superintendent salary database. And if you ever want to get really frustrated with your school district, just pull this database up to see exactly what your superintendent is earning. And this morning, I actually pulled up the top tranche of data. And what I've found, again, is that our superintendents are earning far too much and delivering far too little. So, for example, the highest paid superintendent in Texas currently earns more than $500,000 in base salary alone. That's just base salary that doesn't account for any of the rich benefits that they're generally awarded. And I'm talking about things like housing allowances, car allowances, cell phone allowances, and then all the other benefits that you usually find in these superintendent employment contracts. But this gentleman, the Cypress Fairbanks ISD superintendent, earned a total of $512,000. And so what this tells me is that we have alignment of sorts when it comes to the salaries that are being provided, and I think the expectations that we all have about working for government.
Right.
And by the way, And I don't mean to pick on Cypress Fairbanks alone, because, of course, you know, many of his colleagues earn a commensurate amount of salary as well. He's just the highest paid. And I think, you know, I think we're doing a disservice to taxpayers by awarding these this particular class so much in compensation.
Right. And if I could take that example of the article you wrote on Jeannie Stone, was that gets close to $500,000. In fact, it gets over $500,000 if you include these retention bonuses that they put in. So the last couple of years with COVID, teachers got a retention bonus of about $1,500. And it was a windfall for a lot of teachers. They were like, woo, that's great. It's amazing. That's the most bonus we've ever gotten. It was very cool. But if we look back at the superintendents, they were getting $330,000 a year. On top of that, they were getting their 403B, which for those listening in is like a 501K, but a 501K that is for education. They were paying that for the superintendent in the form of a stipend for $5,000 a month. So that's, you know, $50,000, $60,000 a year. And they're also paying on top of their salary the TRS benefits, which is about 7% of salary. So that was another $25,000 a year. So just on those two extra stipends alone, they were getting $405,000 a year. Then you add to that, you talk about other things. The retention bonus for them was 15% of salary per year, payable every 3 years. So if you do the quick back of the napkin math, that works out to about $150,000 bonus every 3 years. So last year, I think that Superintendent Stone took home about $570,000. So yeah, those numbers are not going to show up on that top level TEA form for sure.
No, you're right. You know, the numbers are simply staggering when you look at them. And, you know, there are, of course, consequences for paying administrators this much money. One is, of course, the taxpayer impact. You know, we're all going to be paying a little bit more for our homes or businesses. But there's also an impact on morale, I think, within the school district itself, because at one end of the spectrum, you have administrators, not just the superintendent himself or herself, but also those that surround them in their immediate orbit, earning very generous salaries, both base salaries and the benefits themselves. And at the other end of the spectrum, you have teachers who are being forced to, you know, go out and buy their own classroom supplies. I mean, it's very unfair the way that the system has emerged. And I think we really need to take a look at this issue in the next legislative session to bring some balance to the system.
Absolutely. We didn't even touch on the top tier level as well, all those admin building folks and assistant superintendents and deputy superintendents and what their pays are. And that's a good place to wrap for a break here. We're about to go on break. So we'll be back here in just a moment discussing more with Mr. James Quintero from the Texas Public Policy Foundation about all things finance in the school district and in government public policy generally. We'll be right back.
How long has it been since you've updated your brand or restocked your promotional items? The more often people see your company logos and taglines, the more often your company comes to mind. That top-of-mind thinking is exactly what grows businesses and generates revenues. So at Big Feet Creations, I've dedicated my time and talent for over 30 years designing and illustrating print and digital products that people love and remember. Now we're adding website design and audio-video editing too. Call Big Feet Creations at 469-450-7350. I'm a big guy, and I've taken big steps to help you grow big. Big Feet Creations, 469-450-7350. Call today. That's 469-450-7350.
Move freely, America, without medical restrictions or penalty. Without medical freedom legislation in place, our rights and freedoms are one vote away from being dissolved. Move freely, America, with one voice, without fear of retribution, achieving a common goal, medical freedom. We the people make our voices heard by connecting with state legislators and engaging a constitutionally compliant medical bill of rights for all citizens. Individually, change is improbable, but as an aggregate, attainable. It's time to act with one voice. My voice.
And my voice.
And my voice.
And my voice.
To protect our freedom, creating one voice that cannot be ignored. This requires your voice, too. Move Freely America. Go to movefreelyamerica.org to find a chapter near you. Plug in, donate, and help our legislators defend our God-given rights under the Constitution. Move Freely America. My voice.
And my voice.
And together with your voice, we're one voice that cannot be ignored. Donate today. movefreelyamerica.org.
And welcome back to Ewan, Me, and the ISD. I'm your host, Ewan Blackman, here on the OBBM Network. And we're just speaking with James Quintero here with the Texas Public Policy Foundation about all things school-related in terms of financing, and just finished wrapping up a conversation about superintendent salaries. How much do they get paid? What's the real number on that? And how we can address some of the public policy solutions to that. And James, you were mentioning that this is going to be brought to the next Texas legislating session, which comes up in January. As a way of reminder for folks, Texas legislature meets every odd numbered year. So we don't meet in even only odd numbers. And it usually goes from January through about, I believe it's May, unless they call emergency sessions. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. We meet every other year for a 140-day period. And so we're coming up on the next legislative session beginning early January and lasting in through May.
Great. So what are you guys going to propose to fix that? The superintendent pay issue, upper admin issues. I had, as a way of context to this, I had a couple of folks I hosted a few years ago in my house from Taiwan that came on an exchange program. One was a teacher, one was a principal. And I asked them directly about this discrepancy between teacher pay and principal pay. Just for the audience at home, teachers make around $60,000 a year for 187 days of work, and a principal makes around $90,000 to $140,000 a year, depending on what school they're in, for working 226 days. So that's all to contextualize the fact that principals and assistant principals make a large amount more than teachers do. But in Taiwan, they were only making about $6,000 to $8,000 difference. And I asked them, so why, as a principal, do you have this idea where you don't make a large amount more than a teacher? He goes, well, because a teacher impacts the society by educating students, and the principal impacts society by working with the teachers to be better at educating students. So similar job functions. So why would he make a whole lot more? So how do we address that with the Texas legislation that they can fix this discrepancy in pay from the top to the bottom?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one of the first things that I think we need to do is introduce some additional transparency into the system. And what I mean is that most people don't recognize just how much their superintendents are earning, nor those, again, that immediately surround them. And so what we would be asking the legislature to do is to require that superintendent employment contracts in particular be posted online in a prominent place within the district's website. I think people ought to have the ability to see, okay, this is what they're earning, this is what they're getting in benefits, and then maybe they can connect that information with some other information that the Texas Education Agency has regarding the A through F accountability system, because of course, TEA does a great job grading districts and their academic performance. And then people can start making some judgment calls about whether or not their superintendents are earning too much or too little based on what students are actually learning and demonstrating. Another thing that I find really appealing is there's this idea at the legislature that we ought to limit superintendent salaries to no more than what the governor makes. And I think you can articulate a pretty good case that, look, the governor has the responsibility for, let's say, you know, providing and protecting the rights of 30 million plus Texans. Right. And he only makes about $150,000 a year. Now, you compare that, again, with some of the highest earning superintendents in the state who are pulling in well over $500,000 in just base salary alone. And you can see there's definitely some need for reconfiguring the system. And so I really like this this idea that's bouncing around the legislature right now about putting some hard limits on what a superintendent can earn. And perhaps we can shift those resources down to the classroom level.
No, I agree. I agree totally. I think if you look at the numbers, we've got, what, 1,100 or so ISDs, each with a superintendent in the state of Texas. I would say it's safe to assume most superintendents make over $100,000 a year in the rural communities, and then 300 plus in the cities, the urban areas. So you do some math on that, you're talking up the billions of dollars. And that's also a liability on TRS as well, the Texas Retirement System for teachers, which superintendents do pay into and do get those benefits. I think if I look at the last superintendent number, they took the, we talked about a car allowance, they took a $12,000 car allowance, rolled that into their salary. And so now that's payable in their retirement, which is absurd if you think about that. And again, I know it's $12,000. Doesn't sound like a lot of money, but when you're getting paid 70% of your salary for the rest of your life, you're talking about, you know, $8,500 worth of extra pay per year for a car allowance that was in your salary instead of being a separate line item that didn't get paid into the retirement. So it seems like the folks feeding at the, I think Lynn Davenport is at the feeding at the trough of education, and it's a massive trough.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And, you know, back in my day, we used to pay for cars, housing, and cell phones out of the salary that we got. We didn't get an additional stipend. And so, you know, I think we need to re-examine superintendent compensation as a whole and really bring some balance to the system, because you're right. You know, there are a lot of people that are feeding at the trough right now, and it's putting an undue pressure on taxpayers.
Absolutely. And the teachers, and I'm an educator, so I feel some of that pressure on the other side. I was commenting, my wife and I are both teachers, and we're making more money than we ever have in education, but we feel the biggest squeeze. Now, some of that's due to inflation, et cetera, but the pay raises we get compared to what a superintendent gets, where we get a 3% raise, that's about $1,400 to $1,500. But if a superintendent gets a 3% pay raise, that's $9,000. So you just sort of accelerate that gap. And we talk about closing the gap, and that would be one place. But let's talk about the other end of that equation, which is a taxpayer, right? These tax rates that we pay. And talking about bonds, we just had an election recently, and some of these school districts had massive bonds out there. Down in your hometown, Austin ISD put out a big bond there, and that's going to be the taxpayers on the hook for that.
Yes, we have an absolutely staggering amount of local government debt in Texas. In fact, when you look at the data, it shows that Texas's local debt per capita ranks as the third highest among the top 10 mega states. We are only behind New York and California when it comes to our local debt burden. It's absolutely staggering. I was looking at some recent data from the Texas Bond Review Board that showed in fiscal year 2021, our local governments, all of our cities, all of our counties, all of our school districts, all of our special districts owed a combined $390 billion.
Let's hold that thought, James, because on that $390 billion, let's take a break, come back, digest that for a minute, and take a breath, and we'll be right back.
Multiple streams of income are the local business owner's new protection against inflation. If you enjoy sharing health insights and helping others live their healthiest lifestyle possible, you can create wealth for yourself and your family by doing what you love to do every day. Call 469-939-8933. Discover how to incorporate additional financial revenue into your love of health and wellness and the work you're already doing, using your time wisely and leveraging networks you already work with. Ready to learn more? Join the Wellness Institute's Carola Bratis, subject of the book, Look Beyond Tomorrow, to help even more people realize their potential and achieve their health goals. Build a side business with products sourced in North America and protect your bottom line. Call 469-939-8933 today. That's 469-939-8933. Call now. The OBBM Network is the premier voice for local business, and we take that responsibility seriously. The OBBM Network has everything you need to grow and transition your business for success on popular syndicated podcast networks, Roku and other video channels, and the OBBM Network app. We work for you, local business, and we've got your back.
And welcome back to Ewan, Me, and the ISD. I'm your host, Ewan Blackman, on the OBBM Network, talking with James Quintero about all things policy related. He is with the Texas Public Policy Foundation, and we'll talk about taxes. And we just threw out a number there before we took the break. It was $380 billion with a B. That's
$390 billion, Ewan.
Sorry?
$390 billion.
Oh, so even worse.
What's a few billion between friends, though?
Indeed. What are a few billion between friends? Well, it comes out of our taxes, right? And I think my wife and I on our house, we're paying around $9,000 per year to all the government entities. So just to live in my house has cost me about $800 a month in rent to the government, so to speak. Are you guys addressing that at all there at the Texas Public Policy Foundation? Do you have any ideas on how to give the average tax person a little relief on this? Because it seems like an exorbitantly high number.
Yeah, we do. You know, we actually have quite a few local debt reforms that we're going to be pushing forward in the next legislative session. But to add a little context to what's happening right now, you know, that $390 billion figure is mostly made up of school district debt. In fact, about $150 billion of that is on account of school districts borrowing a lot of money at taxpayer expense. Now, we put in place some reforms in the past to try and get a handle on this runaway problem. And a couple of things that we did, I think, are starting to bear fruit, one of which was the passage in 2019. And what it did is it required school districts to no longer be able to put forward a single item bond proposition, but instead break out these bonds by expenditure type. And so now voters have a little bit more choice in the matter, and they can say, yeah, you know what? We do need an instructional facility, but no, we don't need a stadium right now. And so I think we're seeing a lot of fruit from that. Another one that I think has been a very good success for taxpayers is this provision that was inserted into HB 3 back in 2019 that requires school districts to disclose on the ballot that this is a property tax increase. And what we were trying to do is make the connection for voters that there is a fiscal impact to saying yes to a bond. So to help, you know, we wanted to help make the connection that new debt basically means new taxes. And so I think that's beginning to bear fruit as well. We have some ideas to build on those two concepts moving forward. And I'm happy to get into the details of that. But I think there's a lot that needs to be done because this is a runaway problem. Just this year alone, we saw $34 billion in bond propositions pitched in May. And we saw another $21 billion in bond propositions pitched yesterday on Election Day. And so, you know, we just have a deluge of debt coming at us, and we need to do some things that protect taxpayers from the consequences.
So that's about $56 billion added to the $390 billion just this year.
Just this year alone. And of course, that $55 billion or so is just the principal amount, right? Because the jurisdictions will only tell you, well, we want to borrow this much money, and they don't disclose the interest that they project will also accumulate. And so, you know, just that portion alone is principal only.
And that's tough to show that, because I did this speech before the Richardson ISD School Board back in 2016 when they looked to pass a $437 million bond. And we'll link that in this file down below. So take a look at that. I spoke very clearly about building a better bond before somebody else stole that saying. But I said build a better bond and break out the bond, because we had to vote $437 million wholesale for everything. You either took it or you didn't. And so when you're saying, no, vote no, they were like, oh, what, you against kids? You must hate kids, right? And I'm like, I'm a teacher. That doesn't compute. But that's the type of divisive and divisive type of rancoring that you're going on when it comes to schools. Is that leverage the relationship? Most people love teachers. Parents love teaching the job they do. And so they, I said they were pitting the taxpayer against the teacher. And that's what happens with a lot of these bonds, is they don't go to these programs that really enhance and bring about good results for students academically. They spend way too much money on sports, way too much money on turfs and things that, you know, I liken kids a lot of times to cats. If you give a cat a cardboard box or you give them the present, they spend more time playing with the cardboard box. They don't need all these fancy things to achieve the same outcomes for sports. And not to say I'm against sports or against having those fancy things, but let's get the academics right first, because that's what school's there for, ultimately.
Yeah,
that's talk that's a little absolutely bit about the idea of auditing what we're doing in the school. So you mentioned that they don't really pitch how much the interest is on these bonds. And so previously, Richardson, when they did the $437 million back in 2016, I'm not including the $750 million one they just did in 2021 that they're now under for, that they need to look. We did that on a previous podcast. But to say, how do we hold them accountable? How do we know that the money's being spent in a good way? We talked about superintendent salaries, talk about that admin building. How much should they be taking? How much should they be paid? How do we get to know? How can we audit this as just everyday taxpayers and make sure that they're spending the money correctly?
Good question. You know, in my mind, I think we need an outside party to really come in and look at the budget and operations to determine whether or not taxpayers are getting the best ROI, or whether there's some ways that we can improve school district operations. And so, you know, kind of this thought process was the basis for an idea we helped insert in the big school finance reform bill back in 19, whereby a school district must undergo an independent efficiency audit of their budget and operations if they wish to exceed the revenue limitation that has been put in place by the state. And of course, that's 2.5%. Now, that I think people who are interested in good government could actually use that in a novel way. You know, we don't need to wait for school districts to pitch these big tax increase elections before we can do the auditing. We can actually do this voluntarily now. And so, you know, for conservatives and libertarians and people interested in good government, I would encourage those folks to approach their trustees and start asking and advocating that they undergo a third-party efficiency audit now, voluntarily, to see how we can do things better in the district. And by giving people that additional context, I think we could actually take things to the next level with respect to school finance.
That's a great point. And let's pause there for a minute for a revenue generating break. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the independent efficiency audit and what you can do at home to make these things happen. We'll be right back.
It seems like there's never enough time in your business to get everything done that you need to. Searching for the right employees to represent your brand and satisfy your customers was already hard enough. And now there are even fewer options out there. How do you find the right people and keep them? My name is Terrell Tipton with Insperity, and we offer HR services that make your company make sense. Too often, local business owners take on HR activities, wanting to run their business on a shoestring, but that can mean sacrificing revenue-generating activities that allow you to continue to grow and serve your community at the level you want. Call 972-409-4316 today. I'll walk you through Insperity's outsourced HR services and health insurance options and help you come up with a plan that gets the most out of your business and your budget. Insperity provides stability to businesses in uncertain times and has been helping companies just like yours since 1986. Call 972-409-4316 and talk to me, Terrell Tipton. It's time for your business to run better, grow faster, and make more money. 972-409-4316. Call today. One last time, 972-409-4316.
Interested in starting a podcast or TV show? Worried about what you'll say and how to keep it engaging? Think you'd like to be a guest on podcast, radio, or TV shows? Hi, I'm Susan Hamilton, owner and founder of OBBM Network, and I would like to invite you to an OBBM media training to get the tools you need for a relaxed and polished performance you'll be proud to share. Our specialized training techniques include role play, voice training, and everything you need to deliver a confident, clear, and engaging interaction. Go to offbeatbusiness.com. Go to the calendar and register for a training that's convenient for you. Dates available now, 214-714-0495.
Welcome back to You and Me and the ISD, a vodcast here on the OBBM Network. I'm your host, Ewan Blackman, talking with James Quintero of the Texas Public Policy Foundation, taking a look at how we can hold our governmental entities accountable to what they spend and how much they spend and where they spend it. And as a way of reference, we were just talking about an independent audit, an independent efficiency audit, to be more specific. And with the RISD, or with a lot of ISDs in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, they're at about 90% of their M&O, maintenance and operation funds, go to salaries. And salary is a big part of that. I've looked at our school district, and we've grown from about 5,000 employees to about 5,600 in the last 5 years, with no corresponding increase in student population. In fact, we decreased about 1,500 students. Could you address that just a little bit? How would an efficiency audit take a look at payroll? Because that's one of those soft costs that can be buried very easily and can be very confusing for the average parent, taxpayer, folks like me, community members who are looking at this saying, how's this going?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. It, you know, the way that the efficiency audit is set up now under HB3 is the districts are required to use an internal auditor. Now, that was not our preference when this particular idea was established, but it's what we got and what we're working towards. What I think the ideal ought to be is bringing in some set of outside eyes to really crack open the books and figure out if we're doing things well. And by the way, you know, a lot of people hear the word audit and they immediately think of some sort of bean counting exercise. That's not what an efficiency audit is. We're actually going in and looking at systems and processes and managerial practices to see, are there things we could do better that would generate either a better ROI for taxpayers or that would make us more efficient? And so, you know, this is a really important established concept that's utilized in other states and localities around the nation. Right. It has a track record of really generating some enormous success. So we were excited to see it established here in Texas with respect to school districts. Now, going back to the internal auditor component, while it wasn't our ideal to really see that mechanism used, what we did to at least ensure school districts were looking in the right places is we worked with the Legislative Budget Board, which is kind of the state agency fiscal arm, if you will. And we work with the LBB to develop a set of criteria that will prod internal auditors to look in the right places for efficiencies. And so, you know, on salaries, I think this is a really ripe area for analysis, especially given the flood of federal COVID aid that's flowing through the system right now. We ought to be having these outside eyes look at the system, see, are we spending a lot of money that is going to cause us problems down the road if and when it expires in the future?
Right. And that's a great point in terms of how much does or should go to people doing the job. Because I think I used the example the other day with talking to some folks about just my city alone, the budget in 12 years have increased from about 105 million to now 380 million in 11 years. Where's that money going? And this is a built out city, has been built out for decades. So no one's really asking those tough questions because we don't have the time to stop and have these deep conversations. Part of the genesis behind this podcast was to have more granular discussion about what is happening in our school district. How do we better work with our school district to make these things more efficient and effective? As a libertarian-minded guy, my philosophy has always been, let's have the most amount of good government can create with the least amount of money. Because once they get too much of other people's money, they spend it like it's drunken sailors. And are those things affecting great outcomes for our kids? I referred earlier to this bond that Richardson did in 2016. One of my primary reasons for being against it was we had four indoor football fields being built. So, for example, Allen ISD, which is a big school district north of us, built this massive stadium for about $80 million, and it was all over the news, and everyone talked about it, generated a lot of interest. So Richardson decided to come along, instead of doing a big stadium for $60 million that would then have bad publicity in terms of saying, oh, look at how much they're spending on sports, they quietly did four indoor football fields. And I'd be okay with those if our labs within the school looked good. But no, they got holes in the cabinet, the water doesn't come out the faucet properly, the gas taps don't even work, but we're building a new football facility. So that's where I think, for me, some of that disparity comes. I was glad to see the legislature have them break out the bond. I'd like them to break it out even more, probably into academic, technology, and sports. And maybe fine arts as the fourth. We don't leave those folks out because they definitely add great extra curricula to the programming. If we could take a look at the surplus, though. So we talk about taxes in Texas and how much we have. And what was that budget surplus down in Austin?
Yeah, no, great question. So when the legislature convenes in January, they're expected to have a $27 billion general revenue surplus. Now, that's just within the GR budget. We also anticipate that by the end of fiscal year 2023, they'll also have access to $14 billion in economic stabilization funds, which is the equivalent of the state's rainy day fund. And as a cherry on top, so to speak, we also expect school districts to have an absolute hoard of money in their fund balances. It was brought to the legislature's attention last session that if you were to compile all of the fund balance excess in the state and just ISDs only, you have about $21 billion in unused proceeds. And even if you backed out money that TEA requires school districts to set aside for a rainy day, you're still looking at about $8 billion plus in unused proceeds. So there's lots of money. There's huge pots of money available for tax relief purposes if the legislative will exists.
Right. If the will exists, and I think the will of the people translate sometimes into the will of the government. And I think that's where we need to interact with our elected officials, whether it's on the school board, whether it's on the legislature side, your House representative, your Senate, because that's really where the massive impact. We spend so much time looking at president, we forget about all these others. And so let's address that when we come back from this break, and we'll be right back.
How long has it been since you've updated your brand or restocked your promotional items? The more often people see your company logos and taglines, the more often your company comes to mind. That top-of-mind thinking is exactly what grows businesses and generates revenues. So at Big Feet Creations, I've dedicated my time and talent for over 30 years designing and illustrating print and digital products that people love and remember. Now we're adding website design and audio video editing too. Call Big Feet Creations at 469-450-7350. I'm a big guy, and I've taken big steps to help you grow big. Big Feet Creations, 469-450-7350. Call today. That's 469-450-7350.
Move freely, America, without medical restrictions or penalty. Without medical freedom legislation in place, our rights and freedoms are one vote away from being dissolved. Move freely, America, with one voice, without fear of retribution, achieving a common goal, medical freedom. We the people make our voices heard by connecting with state legislators and engaging a constitutionally compliant medical bill of rights for all citizens. Individually, change is improbable, but as an aggregate, attainable. It's time to act with one voice. My voice.
And my voice.
And my voice.
And my voice.
To protect our freedom, creating one voice that cannot be ignored. This requires your voice, too. Move Freely America. Go to movefreelyamerica.org to find a chapter near you. Plug in, donate, and help our legislators defend our God-given rights under the Constitution. Move Freely America. My voice.
And my voice.
And together with your voice, we're one voice that cannot be ignored. Donate today. MoveFreelyAmerica.org.
And welcome back to You and Me and the ISD, podcast here on the OBBM Network. I'm your host, Ewan Blackman, talking to James Quinteros with the Texas Public Policy Foundation. And we're just talking about surpluses, budget surpluses, tax surpluses. In other words, the government is getting more money from us than they need to spend currently. But as are all good things, when you get more money in than you are spending, you learn ways to spend more rather than give it back to us. So you could talk a little bit about some of that surplus and what the Texas Public Policy Foundation is looking at doing or encouraging, I should say, the Texas legislature to handle that excess.
Yeah, we have our eye on massive tax relief. What we're encouraging our folks at the Capitol to do is to use most of that general revenue surplus to reduce people's tax bills. Now, the way that they do it is important, not just the fact that they do it, but also how they do it. So let me explain. You know, there are some ideas at the Capitol right now about maybe perhaps increasing the homestead exemption, which I tend to view as something of a Band-Aid. Our preference or some other mechanism, our preference is to do tax rate compression. And there's an important reason why. When you think about your school district tax bill, it represents most of your overall tax bill. It's about 50%. And within that 50%, most of that is on account of the maintenance and operations tax rate. That's the tax rate that pays for day-to-day expenses at your school district. Now, our plan, which you can find at texaspolicy.com, encourages the legislature to compress that M&O tax rate in a major way. And we think that if the legislature does that this session, and a few more sessions thereafter, we can actually eliminate that portion of your tax bill over time. Now, what does that do? Well, that gets you a couple of things. One, it provides you immediate and long-lasting tax relief. Two, it puts to use that surplus in a responsible way and also commits future surpluses for tax relief purposes. And perhaps most importantly, it eliminates this really pernicious system called Robin Hood, which takes from some school districts and gives to others. It's this really ugly system that has grown out of control over time. And this plan that we put forward would eliminate that entirely.
Yeah, that's where Dallas ISD, for example, pays into that. Richardson pays into that. Highland Park, which is the largest exemplar of how bad that program is. They generate about $190 million in taxes, and they get to keep about $65 million. So the rest of that, close to $120 million, goes back to you guys down in Austin. But not Austin ISD, by the way. They just re-spread that out. So we need to address some of the disparity that we have in the rural communities, because I know that they do struggle with their budgets. But, you know, rural community looking at a $10 million budget is common in a small town where they've got a couple of thousand students, 3,000, 4,000. 10 and a half million in budget, you get to somewhere like RISD where you have 37,000 students. And we now have a $394 million budget, was the last number we heard. There's no requirement, though, for the school district to the school of board of trustees. There's no requirement for them to actually give any of that money back to the taxpayer, is there?
No, there's really not, which is unfortunate given the state of play right now. You know, you have a lot of people who are struggling to pay for food, fuel, and rent, and folks really need a helping hand. You know, one of the appealing aspects of this plan to eliminate the school district maintenance and operations tax rate is it's actually part of a larger effort to eventually get to a place where we no longer have a property tax in Texas, where you're no longer paying rent to the government, but instead you get to own your own home or business in perpetuity. And so this is kind of that first incremental step in that direction, where once we eliminate the school M&O tax, then we can shift gears and start looking at city, county, and special district taxes and walk the legislature to that place.
Hold on, you know, I hear screaming in my ear, right? There's a bunch of folks over here going, how are we going to pay for any of this? I'm a teacher. How are you going to pay my salary if you get rid of taxes? Taxes are like death, right? They're a necessary evil.
Well, you know, one of the really, I think, beneficial aspects of the Texas economy is that we've diversified in such a way where we have a really strong and robust economic position that is generating all sorts of revenue based on the existing sales tax system that we have in place. We've modeled out what it might take for us to eventually get to a place where there is no longer a property tax, but instead we're relying on a reformed sales tax system. I can tell you that if we expand the base, and I don't even think you need a rate adjustment upwards, you might even be able to adjust it downwards slightly, but you can generate the same amount of revenue that's being produced now, but do so in a way that eliminates property taxes and restores property rights.
Well, that'd be great. Because like I said, I'll be looking at a $900 a month kind of a bill to stay on my house when I retire. That's a lot of money. And talking about rates, by the way, you addressed this earlier a little bit with the legislature saying in the last session that even though they may be not increasing your tax rate, some of these bonds that get passed is in fact a tax increase. Example is the district I live in has reduced the rate this year on the M&O side by 7 cents, 0.07 down. And they just leave it at that. They don't tell you what that actually means to you, because I point out that we don't write a check for our tax rate. We write the dollars. And the dollar value that increases on my home will be $700 increase, even though that is 0.07 rate reduction. And that literally is a one-minute explanation, is it not, for most districts, if they wanted to be straightforward and upfront about that?
Yeah, if they wanted to be forthright with that information, they could do so in fairly straightforward fashion. You know, one of the public has really been done a great disservice, because you have a lot of trustees who are out there effectively captured by special interest or the system itself, and promoting this idea that we can go forward with these big, huge bonds and not adjust the rate. You know, they often say it won't incur a tax rate increase. But what they neglect to tell you is that your INS rate ought to be coming down as you pay down the debt, and especially with valuations going the way they are, you know, that rate should be coming down. But because it's not, it's putting upward pressure on your tax bill, and you're going to be paying more at the end of the day,
right,
if and when that big giant bond passes.
Terrible. And then talking about big bonds, let's come back and talk in a minute about the ESSER funds. So we'll take a break and we'll be right back in just a moment.
It seems like there's never enough time in your business to get everything done that you need to. Searching for the right employees to represent your brand and satisfy your customers was already hard enough, and now there are even fewer options out there. How do you find the right people and keep them? My name is Terrell Tipton with Insperity, and we offer HR services that make your company make sense. Too often, local business owners take on HR activities, wanting to run their business on a shoestring. But that can mean sacrificing revenue-generating activities that allow you to continue to grow and serve your community at the level you want. Call 972-409-4316 today. I'll walk you through Insperity's outsourced HR services and health insurance options and help you come up with a plan that gets the most out of your business and your budget. Insperity provides stability to businesses in uncertain times and has been helping companies just like yours since 1986. Call 972-409-4316 and talk to me, Terrell Tipton. It's time for your business to run better, grow faster, and make more money. 972-409-4316. Call today. One last time, 972-409-4316.
Interested in starting a podcast or TV show? Worried about what you'll say and how to keep it engaging? Think you'd like to be a guest on podcast, radio, or TV shows? Hi, I'm Susan Hamilton, owner and founder of OBBM Network, and I would like to invite you to an OBBM media training to get the tools you need for a relaxed and polished performance you'll be proud to share. Our specialized training techniques include role play, voice training, and everything you need to deliver a confident, clear, and engaging interaction. Go to offbeatbusiness.com. Go to the calendar and register for a training that's convenient for you. Dates available now, 214-714-0495.
And welcome back to Ewan, Me, and the ISD. I'm your host, Ewan Blackman, here on the OBBM Network, talking with James Quintero. So we just left off talking about the ESSER funds. Could you address a little bit of that? Because, I mean, it seems the federal government just had a dearth amount, I mean, trillions. Now we went from billions, now we're going to trillions to wrap our mind around what that means.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. And it's one that has the potential to really unleash, I think, some terrible consequences in the future. So effectively what the ESSER funds are is it's quote unquote free federal dollars provided by Congress to school districts for the purpose of really bridging the academic gap that emerged during the COVID era, because of course, you know, school districts everywhere, I think, made some huge missteps when it came to helping educate the kids. And so, you know, a lot of the ESSER monies are either to augment existing services or to provide new services, things like, you know, weekend school or after the normal hours. And so, you know, there's a lot of money flowing through the system. Now, the danger that this presents won't actually be realized for a little bit while into the future. And what I mean is that the federal government has provided tens of billions of dollars to school districts, but these are one-time monies. Now, you and I probably immediately recognize that government hates to eliminate programs and positions. So anything that has been created with these federal dollars, there's going to be a temptation to continue them into the future. Right. And what that means is taxpayers are going to possibly have to absorb the cost of continuing those programs and positions. And that's going to mean right. You and I pay more taxes.
Well, I think Reagan, President Reagan said it best when he said that the closest you get to eternal life is a government program, right?
He nailed it as usual.
So we've talked about quite a variety of topics today. We've gone from talking on salaries, superintendents, and upper admin all the way across to tax rates and how did that affect what we pay versus what we're told the impact will be. Because, hey, pass a bond for $1 billion and there's no tax rate increase. So how are you getting free money? Well, you're not. In the example of my school district, next year our tax rate on the bond side would drop about 31% if they don't pass another bond. So guess what they're doing? They're going to come to us with another bond next year. Now, it so happens we're under on the last bond we passed because of the increase in construction costs have been pretty major. So there's some legitimate reasons to do that. But what was that saying? Don't let a crisis go to waste.
Go to waste.
Exactly. Let's tell people we need the money. So if you could talk for me a little bit about some of the appraisal side of this and how we can tie that together in terms of things that you can do as a policy institute, a policy foundation to help the average taxpayer. We talked a little bit about some of the surplus and how we can get that back and eventually eliminate that property tax and find better ways, for example, through the use of sales tax and maybe even reduce it from, I think in Texas, in the Dallas area, we pay 8.25%. 8.25%, and you thought we could reduce that. But maybe talk a little bit about some of those requiring the third parties to take a look at some of the efficiencies and how can we make government run better? Because if I'm going to be a libertarian, I'm going to say, I want the government to do the most good with the least amount of money. We need to find ways to make that dollar stretch. Are you guys looking at some of that? Is there some policy online that you can direct us towards that would help us crystallize some of those things, some of those thoughts on that regard?
Yeah, we have an absolute warehouse of research and data at texaspolicy.com. I would encourage everybody to take a look. You know, when it comes to the foundation's work on property taxes, I'll say that most of our work in the past is really focused on rates and revenues. And this is the first legislative session where I think we're going to be tackling appraisal reform in earnest fashion. And just one of the things that we're considering here is looking at reforming the system in such a way that all real property has some level of protection. So as you probably are already familiar with, you know, if you have a residence homestead in Texas, then you have a limitation on how fast your taxable value can increase. It's basically a 10% cap. Well, right. You know, one of the unintended consequences of that, and, you know, I support the mechanism, but there is an unintended consequence in that the jurisdiction will shift the revenue pressure that ought to be on that residence to commercial and industrial properties. And so, you know, your businesses really have very little protection when it comes to what homesteaders enjoy. I think all real property ought to have some sort of limitation in place on how fast the taxable value can grow. You know, something else that we're looking at is when you look at your appraisal districts, some of the boards are, it's a bit like the wolves are guarding the hen house because the members themselves are selected by the taxing entities.
Wow.
Right. So you'll have your school districts or your cities or your counties nominate people to serve on that appraisal district board. I think that's unfair. And I want to see some level of separation put into place where these folks are selected in a little bit different manner and have some separation between them and the taxing entities themselves. Another idea we're considering.
Well, thank you. That's great. And, you know, this is a conversation we could have for another year or two and still not get to the bottom at all. But, James, I hope you'll come back and talk a little further on some of these policy initiatives, especially as it relates to education and how people can be aware of where is the money going, how's it being spent, and how much are they taking in. I appreciate your time today. It's been fantastic talking to you. And again, that website for you guys that people can go to for good resources on taxes?
Yes, sir. TexasPolicy.com, and Texas is spelled out.
Great. Thanks so much. This has been Ewan, me, and the ISD, and I was your host, Ewan Blackman. Thanks for tuning in.
You've been listening to the Ewan, me, and the ISD podcast on the OBBM Network podcast. For guests and sponsor information, reach out to Ewan at 214-901-5013. For programming information and permissions to reproduce all or portions of this podcast, please call 214-714-0495. You and me and the ISD podcast are protected under copyright law, and reproduction without permission is strictly prohibited. Follow the OBBM Network podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, and remember to leave us a review. Thank you for listening. Share this with your friends and family for a proactive approach to solving issues in our school districts.